Hello and welcome to MVP, the Master's Voice podcast from MediaBrief.com. I'm your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla, and with me today is a remarkable science-savvy entrepreneur, also called the Genome Man of India, Sam Santosh, founder and chairman of SciGenome Private Limited. Sam, welcome to MVP, the Master's Voice podcast on MediaBrief.com.
Thanks, Pawan.
Thank you, Sam, for your time. And thanks also to Dr. Arun Abraham Isao, PhD, Senior Account Director at AdFactors PR, for having made this interaction possible. So, Sam, before we begin our conversation, I'm sure my listeners will want to know more about you, called the Genome Man of India across all important circles of healthcare, and the wonderful dispensation that at all levels is working hard to empower and promote this crucial sector in India. But before we get on to that, Sam, and remember, you also have to tell us how, from a successful technocrat in the Silicon Valley in the US, you got interested in genomics and then went on to create the largest genomics research and delivery setup in India. So let me cut to the chase now and introduce my listeners to you, Sam, on MVP, the Master's Voice podcast on MediaBrief.com. So by your leave, here goes. Sam Santosh, founder and chairman of SciGenome Private Limited, founded SciGenome Labs in 2009, and it has incubated and spun off several successful companies such as MedGenome, AgriGenome, Saxon Life Sciences, and MagGenome. Sam currently focuses on the activities of the SciGenome Research Foundation, a non-profit organization that promotes science education and research in India. Before this, Sam was CEO and MD, Managing Director, of California Software Limited, CalSoft. Sam founded CalSoft in 1992, way back. And under Sam, CalSoft rapidly grew from a niche player in the Silicon Valley to a global player with more than 1,200 employees and a presence in 8 countries. Sam took CalSoft public and listed the company on the Indian stock exchanges. Sam holds a degree in mechanical engineering and an MBA from IIM Calcutta, and is a strong believer in continuous learning. And Sam has attended various programs at the University of Berkeley, MIT, and Singularity University. Sam was honored as one of the 100 most intriguing entrepreneurs globally by Goldman Sachs in June 2019. So that, my dear listener, is the wonderful guest I have, the expert, Sam Santosh. Welcome once again to the MVP, the Master's Voice podcast from MediaBrief.com.
Thank you.
So Sam, you started SciGenome and your other companies later, you know, beginning October 2009. The biggest endorsement of the potential and relevance and great significance of any company, any startup, any, you know, group of other companies that it begins is the kind of monies that it can raise in the marketplace. So, you know, how much, what kind of monies have you raised over the last decade?
Yeah, the companies that we spun off, we raised about a total of about 1,500 crores.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. I'm aware you were a successful IT professional and one of the early successful entrepreneurs from Silicon Valley in USA. Tell me a bit about your overall educational background that I might have missed, particularly the main learnings that I might have missed out in my profile that I read of you. And then about your journey in the software industry that also spans a decade. Please, go ahead, Sam.
Thanks, Bowen. So, I took my engineering degree in mechanical engineering in 1984 from Trichur, Kerala, which is my hometown as well.
Right.
And then took my MBA from IIM Calcutta in completing that in 1987. But at that time, very few people went to the entrepreneurship route, you know, unlike now. And so most of the people would just go to the placement route and take jobs in good companies. But I had decided at that time that I would be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
So I completely avoided the placement interviews and was very clear that I would start my own company.
Okay.
And because of that plan, while I was doing my MBA, I had specialized in software.
Okay.
At that time, it was called MIS, Management Information System.
Hmm.
So I wanted to really learn software and enable myself to be, you know, competent enough to start my own software development company.
Okay.
So, and I was again a little bit attracted back home. So I started it in the company in Cochin and Trichur, which are the two towns in Kerala. And the market was reasonably good at that time because the India was just witnessing the arrival of the personal computers, the PCs. Mm. And so companies small and large were buying and setting up PCs.
Mm.
So there was a lot of demand for custom software as it was the first wave of computerization, and the software packages, you know, like Tally and others were not available there.
Mm.
So if you bought a computer, you would need somebody to set up your software and develop your software for you.
Mm.
So for the first 3-4 years, I did that. You know, setting up more than 100 to 150 companies across South India.
Lovely. Sam, that's truly marvelous. But I have to interject with a question here. I mean, when everybody was taking the, you know, placement agency route and, you know, getting a decent cushy job and working and growing in it, you know, you decided to become an entrepreneur. Was there anyone in the family who was an entrepreneur before you, or was it, you know, a spark to a bright, brilliant guy?
Well, I wouldn't know about the brightness of the brilliance, but I was very clear that I would be an entrepreneur, but not because there was anything in the family. We are very much from an academic-oriented family.
Okay.
My dad was a professor teaching engineering.
Wonderful.
You know, and my grandfathers, they were all teachers. So there was no real entrepreneur bug in the family. But somehow, I caught it from outside, I guess.
Right, Sam. So, you were telling me about how many customers you acquired initially.
Yeah, so these are mostly small companies, but that kept me busy, and I could set up a small team of software engineers as well to develop software for these custom software for these companies.
Mm.
But after three to four years, it became clear that the local market will grow only pretty very slowly. And so if I really wanted to build a large company, I would have to look outside.
Mm.
So that is when I started looking at the US. And then decided to make a trip to the US to look for customers.
Okay.
So my first trip, I met, got introduced to an oil company there called Chem Oil Corporation.
Mm.
So they do oil bunkering. And so that means selling fuel oil to ships. So they were based in San Francisco.
Mm.
And they gave me a couple of projects to start with.
Mm.
We were able to do the projects well.
Okay.
So they got excited at the opportunity of doing offshore, because at 91, this was 1991. So the concept of really an offshore development had not really become obvious then.
What kind of project specifically? What was the ask there? I'm intrigued because you were one of the first innovators there. So tell me.
Yeah, so this was a reasonably large oil company at that time with about, 400 million in revenue, and they had a small software team of their own.
Hmm.
But they're still finding software development a challenge. They had many old systems, mini frames or mainframes that needed to be upgraded.
Hmm.
And they had many other custom software development for the small, they had a small refinery, so that needed software. So there's a never-ending need for software. So that is why they suggested to me that, hey, why don't we start a joint venture? We are willing to invest if you start a company specifically for selling to the US. And you can do for us, and we can also let us sell it to others.
Oh, lovely. And?
So that is why we started California Software. So since I had landed up in California, I thought that's a very simple name. So called it California Software. And they invested 25%. They took 25% equity in the company. So that was our first funding. And they were our anchor customer. So for the first 2-4 years, they were our big customer we would develop.
Mm.
But I was more interested in product engineering. So for further growth of the company, I built CalSoft as a product engineering company.
Lovely.
Because based in the Silicon Valley, we had a lot of opportunities to develop software for large companies like Microsoft or HP or Sony.
Excellent.
So these were our big customers, and so I needed a large team in the US as well, because though we could do offshore, this software was closer to the system, what we call system level software.
Right.
So we needed close interaction with the customers, and so I had offices in San Francisco and Boston.
Excellent.
That was the first level of growth, but product engineering still is a niche. So to grow the company to the next level, I decided to do the inorganic growth as well. So we acquired about 8 companies, small companies, but across 4 countries, US, UK, India, and Japan.
That's really wonderful, Sam. And you got a huge company, a $400 million company, wanting to partner with you and create a value-providing entity, because you must have delivered fabulously well, of course, without doubt. So you've always remained ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, let's say foresight. Because from, you know, from software writing, you came on to product engineering. So that was your big step ahead. What happened after that?
So product engineering was very fascinating, but it was not really a that scalable business, because, you know, it's a more a niche area.
Mm.
So to really build the size of the company, because we had taken the company public as well, so there is much more demand for faster growth.
Mm.
So I decided to go by the acquisition route. I'd taken the company public, so I could use my company shares as well.
Mm.
And using the shares and some currency, what I meant is that some cash that we had generated, we are a profitable company. So with our cash and with the shares, I use that as the tools to acquire 8 companies.
Okay.
That is 2 in the US, 2 in UK,
mm.
3 in India, and 1 in Japan.
Okay.
So that gave us a much more global coverage.
Mm.
And also gave me some exposure, in all these countries to work with different entrepreneurs, because these were small companies that I mostly acquired.
Wonderful, wonderful work, Sam. So let me ask you my next question, which brings us to what you're doing now and how you came to be called the Genome Man of India. So how did you become interested in the transition from software coding to the source coding of life, if I may put it that way? How long did this journey take, and did you have to upgrade yourself in the new life sciences stream to be able to walk the talk in this niche sector?
So while I was building the second phase of Calsoft, moving from the product engineering company to a global player, I noticed that the human genome had been sequenced. The first human genome sequencing was announced in 2004-2005 timeframe.
Hmm.
And it was fascinating for me, mainly because, like I mentioned, I was always been working on system level software, and I knew the power of source code. When you get a source code of something, like we get take an operating system or a device driver, and we get the source code, and we can build whatever we want on top on it by changing the code.
Right.
So when we are getting the with genome sequencing, when we are getting the source code of an organism, you are now getting the power to not only understand what it does, but what can you do now to make it maybe better,
okay,
or also understand what went wrong. If the organism has a problem, it may be a disease, then what is wrong with the code, or what went wrong in some part of the code to make it malfunction.
Okay.
So basically, when you say you get a disease, it's some malfunction has happened, right?
Right.
So was the genetic cause to that malfunction? So that you get the power of. So that is what got me excited in the first phase.
Okay.
Second thing, as I started learning a little more, I realized that, hey, this code is shared by all living things. Same code.
Mm.
There is no difference.
Right.
In the basic code. I mean, you know, in computers, you might have Java or a C++ or different languages. But if you go to the low level of code, like the binary code of the computer, then it is zeros and ones. I mean, you know, the code is the same across all computers.
Right.
Similarly, in life, the source code of life is just 4 letters instead of the 2 letters what we use in computers. Here we have 4 letters, A, G, C, T.
Okay.
Which signify the 4 chemicals that build up the DNA. But with that 4 letters, now you can get the source code of any living organism. So that is why, like you mentioned earlier, we called it a horizontal technology. So I realized that sequencing the DNA and getting the data, and then what we use, say, bioinformatics of analyzing the data, suddenly gives you the power to understand a lot of things of that organism, and also understand the interconnection between all these organisms. I mean, you know, we are all related. Not only all humans related, we are related to all other living things in the world.
Wonderful.
And so we can even trace our journey back, you know, right up to the first, you know, the early bacteria. So the whole route evolution is fully visible in front of us.
Lovely. So before I go on to what I'm really dying to know a lot about, that is Cygenome, I want to ask you, how did this and what did this engineering and management graduate from top echelon universities and institutes in India, what did he do to arm himself better? I mean, you know, source code was in your DNA, if I may say that now, with a pun.
Yeah.
But what did you do? What specific education? I mean, I listed 3 universities, Berkeley, MIT, and Singularity. But still, tell me more. What did you specifically do? Because You're the kind of guy who gets to the bottom of things and really needs to empower himself, even academically or, you know, professional education wise. And that'll be an insight for any startup person, anybody who wants to branch out or expand. So give us that insight. What did you do and why did you do it, education wise?
Very much, Paul. I told you I got excited. So once you, but the excitement part is the easy part, but then learning part is frankly a tough part and a long journey.
Yeah.
So it took me about 4 to 5 years to really start understanding biology first, because we had taken the engineering stream, right? So in those days, then you don't learn biology after the 10th grade.
Correct.
So there's a lot of things to learn. So that is why it really required going back to school, in the sense you have to take classes. So your US, that is very easy because there is evening classes available from Berkeley and other places. So I would have actually went back to school taking the evening classes.
Wow.
And then by that time, also the internet has really become big, and the MOOCs, you know, were available, like Coursera, and there are many early MOOCs that from even MIT and other places. So you could select and choose the best courses that you needed to take.
Okay.
Some courses, you know, actually went go to the university. Some courses you take online. So a mix of online and offline. And I've always been a prolific reader. So I had no problem in getting enough books and learning, self-learning also parallelly. But you need a mix of all this. Then attend conferences so that then you get the industry side also. What are the people doing? What are the companies working on? What are the new technologies coming up? So that gives you then, so you sort of align all of this into coming up with your plan.
Wonderful. So you actually pegged out your milestones on learning before you even got into it, and you spent 4 years.
Yeah, and continuing.
Yes, of course. It's a lifelong process, Sam. Learning is.
Yeah. And I still am nowhere anywhere close to being an expert or anything in this area. But I at least know enough to talk to the scientists, you know, and understand what they're saying when they explain to me, you know, how things work or what are the things that we can do, whether it is to develop a new test or whether it is to work on a new crop. I can at least understand if they say in a very, you know, easy manner, break it down.
Correct.
I'm able to understand, and then I'm able to add my value in. Okay.
You can converse intelligently with them without asking them to explain some basics or the others. You don't need a glossary with an asterisk there.
Exactly.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, yeah.
Yeah. And also, then we are able to sort of imagine the future, right? That is where the places like Singularity University.
Correct.
Or others like Ray Kurzweil and, you know, the Singularities here. In fact, they started Singularity University. So, those type of people, when you read their books also, you see that their guess estimates of what the future will be. Yeah, I mean, it may not be right all the time, but at least the direction of where things are going. So that helps you work out a plan.
Wonderful, wonderful. So this millionaire then spent four, five years before he said, okay, now here is my first formal step. Now tell me, Sam, about SciGenome.
I decided to start SciGenome, and since it was very clear we are going to use genomics as our backbone, I made a play on the word genomics. I took the last three letters of genomics and put it in the front. So that is how the word SciGenome came up. As you can notice, there is no E at the end because genomics does not have an E.
Right.
So SciGenome, and that automatically gave a good tagline for the company called Science of the Genome.
Wonderful.
So we will look at the science of the genome and try to see what are the companies that we can build up to address different business problems.
Right. So tell me, you went about creating different companies that cater to different needs of society. Tell me about those companies also.
Yeah. So SciGenome started with offering services, so that I was clear that I would not take investment in SciGenome because it is just an incubator. It will never have an exit. So I used my own money to build the core skills. And to get some revenue, I started offering DNA sequencing and analytics service in 2009. So there was nobody offering that in India at that time. So the market was small, but at least I could grab whatever market was there. And then I used the learning from the technology to develop the first spin-off company that is called MedGen.
Right.
Because the human seemed to be the most important, you know, question to address. So there are a lot of questions, problems that we didn't know the answer for. Why is a child born with a genetic disease? You know, why is a lady always miscarrying? So there are genetic reasons. Or why is somebody got a cancer but his brother did not get it? So there are many, genetics is not the answer for all diseases, but most diseases or many diseases have a severe genetic component. So you find out those and develop the test, and so genetic tests were not available to you at that time. So we developed a few tests initially and built up a model of this company, and you are also able to get some projects for research projects. So using these two revenue streams, I got, in two to three years, I took a time to get MedGenome to a level where it could be spun off, and the business model was clear.
And 3 years after, when was it founded, you said?
I founded in 2010 as a division of Sai, then spun it off in 2013.
Yeah, today it's a global leader in personalized medicine.
Absolutely.
But tell me a little bit more about it. What are the unique genomic solutions in oncology, diabetes, etc. that is offering? Just touch upon those.
MedGenome has developed over maybe 1,000 tests over the next 10 years.
Okay.
For various diseases, for various sub-diseases in a particular disease. So you can roughly divide it into four areas or four larger domains. Mm. So one is inherited diseases, that is children born with a serious disease. Second is cancer.
Okay.
Third is reproductive genetics. So, when a child, how do you try to make sure after the conception has happened, how do you try to make sure the child does not have a disease, serious disease?
Okay.
And then the last is infectious diseases. So even before COVID, we had started working on tuberculosis and a few other diseases where we could help with genetics to address the problem. So the beautiful thing about this whole industry and the genetic diagnostics is that it was not eating up or competing with the existing genetic tests. So this is just a supplemental one on above that.
Mm.
So we could actually expand the market instead of competing with other diagnostics companies. And so we were the leader and we were making the road, right? The first company to build it up.
Wonderful.
So we built that up.
Excellent, excellent. In fact, you were not just empowering your company and growing it, Sam, but you were also helping the category, because you would need records, patient records, through collaborations with very, very many hospitals, I'm sure. So whom, therefore, in the process, you must have been educating more and more about MedGenome's human genetics research capability.
More than getting other people's data, we are generating data.
Okay.
Which we could then provide to hospitals and to doctors to help them take the right decision.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. So MedGenome was the first solid spin-off.
Yeah.
What happened next? It was followed by?
AgriGenome.
Okay. And that was when?
And that was when MedGenome was spun off, we started incubating AgriGenome in 2013.
Okay.
So it took another 3 years. In 2016, I spun it off as a separate company.
Okay.
The concept is the same, genome sequencing and analysis, but instead of doing it on humans, we do it on plants and animals.
Okay. And what's been its contribution and growth and impact so far?
It has done well. It has labs in Cochin and Hyderabad. The headquarters is Hyderabad because that is where the seed capital of India.
Hmm.
So we help seed companies who are making seeds in rice and wheat, and we help them develop better breeds, better varieties, and help the breeding, which is called genome assisted breeding.
Hmm.
And we have also developed some crops ourselves with better features. With better productivity, better yield.
Hmm.
But the growth is a little slower compared to the medical side, because agriculture crops take the genome itself is more complex than human genomes.
Hmm.
And the process also is more longer in trying to get new things out.
And what followed AgriGenome?
Yeah, the third company was called Saxin Life Sciences. Then we wanted to attempt a drug,
okay.
A new molecule, antibody for one eye disease.
Hmm.
So we took it up to the phase one. Then we sold that unit off to another company who would do the phase one trials and all that.
Okay.
And the last unit we spun out was MAG, not to be confused with MedGenome, it's MAG. It's a magnetic nanoparticle-based company.
Okay.
That's the first product company in the group.
Mm-hmm.
So this would make a product kits for extracting DNA and RNA out of this source material before the sequencing is done. So there are other kits out there, because without these kits, people can't do sequencing or any other testing. The DNA or RNA is used. For example, in COVID, you need RNA.
Mm.
You need a kit to extract the RNA out of blood or saliva or what.
Mm.
But we were the first company to come up with a magnetic nanoparticle-based kit, which is much more efficient.
Mm.
So we have about 5 patents. This company has about 5 patents, global patents. So it took a few years. They started it, incubated it in 2016, and we were able to spin it out in 2018, but it's still slow. But in COVID, we were able to add a lot of value. So we were the first company in the to come up with our own extraction kit here in India using magnetic nanoparticles for COVID.
Lovely.
So we missed the first wave because by the time the ICMR approval and all we got, but with the second wave, we could help India. So we must have done overall, if you look at the COVID phase, about 5% of the tests in India has been done using MagGenome kits.
And I think you crunched the time taken also, right, for the test results to come out?
Yes, yes. But again, we do only a part of it. We are not making the test results. The test has to be done by the RT-PCR machine, whatever others are
using. Okay.
But the sample preparation, that is a step, it is called the first step. Before you go into testing, you need to take the RNA of the virus out of the sample, whether it is a saliva or a nose swab. You need to take the RNA out. That is called RNA extraction.
Lovely. Sam, it's fantastic to see that through SciGenome, you've been able to provide the latest in precision medicine and molecular diagnostics through the different companies that you set up and later separated out, branched out successfully. Very different from those companies is the focus of SciGenome Research Foundation. Tell me a little about it. This is a not-for-profit organization working to promote science in India through research and education. Tell me more.
Yeah. So this actually, we started this much early. I mean, though for a company of our size, typically we are very small, and typically most people start a non-profit foundation and all that after they are much more bigger, like the, you know, the Tatas or whatever. But we felt that there was a big gap. India did not have a nice scientific ecosystem where people could come together, network, collaborate, and both with internal scientists as well as people from abroad, students, all come together and in business people also to discuss and work out possible solutions to the problem. So that is one of the main objectives of SciGenome Research Foundation. And so we, one major theme we made was that one, and we started a genomics conference in India called NGBT.
Okay.
And that we've conducted for 9 years every year in a different city. A pretty large conference bringing in a lot of scientists from abroad and in bringing in our clinicians and scientists in India as well together and entrepreneurs in one place.
Wonderful.
Secondly, we also started funding small research projects in areas where typically they don't get much regular funding. So addressing problems like TB in elephants or a virus for which affects our drinking tea. So things like that, we invested and we put in a research project. Some we funded, others, some we did ourselves. So for example, we published the paper of the Indian cobra genome. We identified the 19 genes that is responsible for the toxin of the cobra. So now we can, it will enable antitoxin manufacturers to make vaccines much more easily.
Lovely.
So these are things that we did, and they got published. In fact, we got the Nature Genetics front page cover for the cobra genome paper. So it was well accepted. So that is continuing, and I'm now also building a medicinal plant garden, which we call Hortus Malabaricus in Kerala.
Lovely, lovely. So Sam, with rich scientific initiatives ongoing, would it be safe to assume that based on the last decade of learning, you're preparing for a SciGenome 2.0? In other words, what does 2022 and beyond look like for you?
One of the problems in which I happened in the first phase, or what we call SciGenome 1.0, since you said 2.0 now, was that the companies were spun out one by one, and we found some challenges in really getting the management team for each of these. The scientific team was assembled upfront, but the management team was not there. So it was a big challenge. I had to spend time in personal time in all the companies. So so obviously, you know, that was not a very healthy way. And so in this next phase of SciGenome 2.0, I'm getting the entrepreneurs upfront and the science people too, and incubating companies in newer technologies, which will still leverage the genome sequence. So sequencing is already there now. So there is, it is pretty much established and stable. And not only MedGenome or AgriGenome, there are a number of other companies in India also doing sequencing. And it has become more of an established. So, but there are new technologies coming in now, allowing you to edit the genome, allowing you to create new genomes or genetic genes, which you can put into other organisms. So these are things that we want to leverage. And I want to not do it myself. That I think, I mean, we are getting old. So it is really to help other youngsters and scientists to set up companies. we will incubate them and we will also fund them to some extent, and will also enable them to get other funding.
Hmm.
Because as from my experience, you know, science, building a science company takes more time and needs a little more different type of expertise than building a e-commerce company or a SaaS company or a, you know, a fintech company. I mean, those are all challenging, but the time frames are short. So my goal is to really see how we can build more companies, help others build more companies in these areas.
No, you're actually evangelizing the entire and strengthening the healthcare sector also in India.
Hopefully, yeah.
No, of course you are. And I see that you also regularly conduct several educational workshops and international conferences to promote science in India, like you mentioned. The AMDP that's coming up on the 15th till the 17th of September, 15th, 16th, 17th, 3 whole days in Chennai, and that's going to host like a who's who from the world of molecular diagnostics and precision medicine. Tell me a little more about that conference, and how has Sam and all his amazing companies in genomics, how have you empowered the entire healthcare system? And don't be bashful or don't be self-effacing. Just throw the kitchen sink at me. But first, let's talk about the AMDP that's coming up.
AMDP stands for Advances in Molecular Diagnostics and Precision Medicine.
Okay.
So this is a little different from the earlier conferences that we were having, which is called NGBT, that is Next Generation Biologics and Bioinformatics.
Okay.
But here we thought we'll focus more on specifically on molecular diagnostics and the new things that are happening in molecular diagnostics. And also precision medicine is going to be so important in the future, as we all need to get the right medicine, which is good for matches with our genetic composition. So there are a lot of exciting things happening world over, and we wanted to bring as much of that possible here, and also, like I said earlier, enable all the stakeholders in the ecosystem to come together. So we are having about 15 or 20 startups present, the new companies that they are building, which we are not involved, but we looked around and looked at some good ones who are doing good work, and we wanted to give them visibility. We're also having some venture capitalists come in there, so they will also see some of these companies, and hopefully there will be something good that will happen. There are some entrepreneurs as well as scientists coming from abroad. There are many Indian entrepreneurs who want to do something in India, maybe get their products here or tie up with Indian companies. And scientists outside who want to work with clinicians in India and other scientists in India and collaborate. So bringing them all together, so we are hoping to, you know, have a good set of about 100 you know, speakers who will speak and who will also interact over the 3 days. And leading that will be Dr. Ada Yonath, who is the Nobel Prize winner.
Wow.
Along with Venki Ramakrishnan in 2009, I think, on the ribosome. So she's participating. Then there are a number of important clinicians in India. Dr. I.C. Varma, who is known as the father of human genetics.
Wow.
In India. Top clinicians like him, Dr. Mohan from Chennai, is diabetes is the best in the world. And India has experts like that, so we get them all together too. And I'm sure, I know, it will be educative to people, and more equally importantly, for all of them to interact together and come up with maybe new projects, new companies.
Lovely. And it's a great way of connecting these wonderful, great, forward-thinking and expert minds with the desire of younger people to sort of break free and go ahead. So, very nice. Really a great confluence of great knowledge and great experience and the passion to innovate with the youngsters. So, excellent. Great job. And I also understand, Sam, that your AMDP event these 3 days in Chennai from 15 to 17 September is the first of its kind in India. Tell me, how has genomics and your entire study, it's a self-explanatory thing, but do you want to put any numbers to the great positive impact or the important buckets of critical to healthcare of humans and other life forms that you and your vision and your companies have helped empower in India?
Sure, Pawan. I can maybe answer that in two parts. One can be like what we have been able to be as a catalyst.
Okay.
We have been able to start and add some value, hopefully. And what more can be done on that foundation?
Sure.
So the sequencing the genome was maybe the first big step, and the most maybe important discovery by our species till date. You know, getting the source code but it has been very tough to really take advantage of it as much as we thought or the industry thought 15 years back when the genome was sequenced. Why? Because the genome is so complex, and understanding it and trying to take benefits out of that has been a much slower process. But the value has been huge in cancer, in reproductive genetics, in inherited diseases. We and other companies have been able to help millions of people. On our own, maybe we must have helped at least 3 to 4 lakhs of people here in India in life-saving decisions about the children, about their treatment, and many other health decisions that they will need to take.
Right.
Similarly, we have been able to, like I said earlier, create new varieties of crops. And not only us, even the government has been working very hard in developing many crops using these technologies, genome sequencing. And it is a beginning and it will continue to grow. But at the same time, in Cygenome 2.0, we are now taking up new technologies as well, which I said earlier, which will really build more on this foundation. So that I'm even more excited about, because as you were also hinting earlier, I always like to be a little ahead of the curve. So what are the new things that are going to come up, and what are the more advantages that we as a country can take, right? And we are already become the 5th largest economy. We will become the 3rd largest economy maybe in another 10 years globally. But at the same time, we have major challenges in healthcare, in nutritious food, in environmental cleanup, because the old growth in the last 100 years of industrialization was good in getting all of us up above the level of poverty and giving us our cars and our phone and our computers and the internet. But at the same time, it damaged the environment so much, right? So all the pollution that we created, all the chemicals that we pump out to the water, all the soil that we have degraded, these are all challenges which a lot of it we are not even aware of. We all hear about the global warming and all that, which is a very important challenge. But I feel that there are even much more serious challenges in the short term. Lack of enough water, good water, lack of enough energy, that is power, clean energy. All that is going to be much challenge. So, but at the same time, there are exciting solutions that can come up through biology.
Right.
So this century is going to be the century of biology.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, give me the idiot's guide to how to get more serious aspects associated with genomics. Tell me how genomics will change the way medical treatments are provided, in short.
Yeah. First of all, we should ensure that no child is born with a genetic. So that can be done by screening. So even before you have a child, if the parents get screened, genetic screen, it will cost maybe only about 7,000 rupees per person. You can avoid about few thousand type of diseases, rare diseases, which are so-called rare diseases. But the person affected still runs to lakhs in India. That can be completely avoided. So that will be, I think, like the way we cured polio.
Right. So are we talking about running these tests when a child is already conceived or before it's conceived?
Yeah, there are tests which can be run after the child is conceived, but ideally, the first test should be done before conception so that you know what you're getting into.
Okay.
So you and your spouse might share the same bad gene, so which gives a very high chance of your child getting it.
Okay.
And this will be much higher if you are related. Like in India, many of us marry our relatives, consanguineous marriages. So the chances become very high of genetic diseases in consanguineous marriages.
And prevention is better than, having to
then do abortion.
It's extremely sad and tragic terminating a pregnancy and something like that.
Absolutely. That will be the one way by which a lot of diseases can be prevented and will become standard.
Yeah, and in the US especially, which is like a suing economy. I'm trivializing it, I'm sorry, but a child could even turn around and sue the parents later saying, you had all of this, all these resources, why didn't you check before you put me through a lifetime of suffering?
Absolutely. Now, this is not like a theoretical thing that me or some other people are saying. About 10 years back, the Ashkenazi Jews, you know, the Jews from Israel, the Ashkenazi Jews are all over the world, and they are the somewhat similar to the Indian communities because they marry only within the Ashkenazi Jews for the last 3,000 years, very consanguineous.
Hmm.
So they have, like us, they have a very high liability of genetic diseases.
Okay.
But 10 years back, when the genetic screening started becoming this, the rabbis, that is the priests, started a program by which you both could send your sample to the rabbi.
Hmm.
The rabbi then would send it for testing, and then without telling what is the problem with each, will warn you about these specific things. They were able to reduce in the last 10 years some of the most prevalent diseases by 70 to 80%.
Which brings me to my next question. Actually, you preempted that. You've been such an evangelist and you go all out to, you know, extend the benefits of great healthcare initiatives to everyone. Knowledge and developing and creating awareness for new categories, which is really remarkable and commendable on your part. But tell me, what stops you and other like-minded leaders like you to request the government to make it mandatory that such genetic screening be done? Just as you say that, before you get married, have an HIV test and do not screen for gender, but then why not say must screen for genetic diseases, and why doesn't the government come ahead and support the population? Because ultimately what it's going to do is it's going to really reduce medical expenses and trauma and agony for people. It might hurt the business of hospitals and caregivers and the professional drugs providers and the insurance folks. But all I'm saying is ultimately it's human wellness that is the core objective, right? So have you thought of doing something like this for the industry?
We have tried in our own ways to promote the awareness and also work with, interact with various government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a single decision-making window here. It's got a lot of connotations, social connotations,
sure.
and challenges, and different thought processes too. So though maybe me and a few others might advocate this,
sure.
There are other people maybe in the world who might say like, hey, you saw even recently in the US, in the Supreme Court, changing a decision, the 50-year-old practice there on abortions, right?
Mm.
And saying like, maybe abortion should be made illegal. So and even here on other places, I heard people saying that, we shouldn't play God. If this is what you are supposed to get.
Correct.
Your fate. You should look after the child or I don't know. Though I don't agree to that. So, but there is, we have to respect a different opinion.
That's your personal view. Absolutely. I asked you because, Sam, you are held in the highest esteem across by everybody and by me also. So I thought I must ask you, at least seek your view. I know it's a very complex issue and it's something that everybody needs to pull together, because ultimately it's human suffering that will be alleviated, future human suffering.
And also to add to that, Pavan, we have to really educate the people also, right? Because now that shouldn't lead to a divorce because the husband now says, okay, the wife, you are carrying this bad, or whatever it is, right?
Understood.
So those type of social implications are also there. So these are so revolutionary developments that has happened in the last maybe less than 10 years, right? Or maybe practically these tests coming in last 5 years.
True.
So I know we all have a tendency to blame the government for not doing enough, but some of these things are pretty challenging to implement.
Sure. And no, it is a benign disposition. It is really working hard across various levels, and the government that is working with experts and people like you all. But Sam, just to take your point further, and I respect the restraint that you also speak about in terms of trying to change things, because there are societal values, there are so many things that are traditions, etc., and very important. At the same time, I feel, this is my personal view, and you can just react to or respond to it, the power of being forewarned and pre-informed is always very strong. And at least with future couples or potential marriages, etc., when people can compare, if it's traditional, they can compare a Janam Patri or a whatever else, they can even probably take that as, the genetic kind of study of both the profiles of the man and the woman who are getting married. and perhaps say, okay, I know about this now, so we won't conceive and we will probably adopt another child. So whatever it is, the point is only to keep them forewarned, is my view. I'm dwelling on it, I'm sorry, but...
Absolutely, Pawan, you're right. And also to add to that, not only an adoption is an option, now there is IVF SB is becoming pretty common.
Right.
I know it's a little expensive, in vitro fertilization, but still to those who can afford it, that gives a very good option to reduce a lot of the... avoid a lot of the problems, because you can pick an embryo.
Correct.
So when you're doing IVF, you can you know, or you can even at an extreme step will be surrogacy by using somebody else's uterus, but there are multiple ways that are coming up.
Correct.
To not to go for as a drastic step as adoption.
Right. Let's come on to something which impacts the entire healthcare sector, and it's a very important thing. The Honorable Prime Minister had spoken about the bioeconomy, and Able had come out with a massive report on it. So please tell me about it so that our listeners can benefit.
Yeah. Bioeconomy is going to be one of the key parts in the next phase of growth for the economy or the country as a whole.
Mm.
And if you see even the China or US, they have all been spending large amounts of money in research in building this up.
Mm.
India is a little behind, but we can catch up, and we have to catch up. So that is what I think the Prime Minister was saying. And the Able report talks about how this economy, bioeconomy, will grow from 80 billion now to 300 billion by 2030.
Lovely.
And they are nicely split it up into different segments, like the biopharma and different medical diagnostics. They have not taken healthcare delivery in that. Healthcare delivery, they have kept it out of the bioeconomy, which will also grow well. But this, so that is a very good eye-opener for all of us to see that, hey, this is the potential. So from our side, from the SciGenome side, what value we would like to add to that is that, what are the scientific breakthroughs and what are the new technologies that will help this growth?
Okay.
Genome sequencing was definitely one that is very well accepted now. So that we got the power to read. That is what I say when you say genome sequencing, you're reading the code.
Hmm.
So the next step is editing the code. So you make small changes, right? You can correct an error, whether it is in a human or whether it is in a plant or an animal, you can correct the code, and that you do small editing and fix small issues which you can do. Which technology has already happened. The first clinical trial in the US is happening for one disease, which can just as one change in one letter in your genome will make sure that you will not make too much bad cholesterol.
Lovely.
So a company called Verve Therapeutics, which is actually led by a scientist of Indian origin, Dr. Sheikh Kathiration, is already in clinical trials. That will be the first base editing solution for a disease. So when that is approved, it will come across in many diseases, especially where the error is due to one or two single changes in the genome.
Excellent.
The third step will be now then making larger changes in the genome, right? How do you replace a gene or put another gene?
Mm.
Or even go to the extreme of now creating some new gene, things which you want it to produce. Or for example, you take a gene from a plant which is making a good enzyme or something, but it is slow. Maybe the plant makes it only in a small quantity, so it may not become very commercially viable, or you might have to need a lot of land to grow the plants and get that enzyme or medicine out of the plant.
Got it.
So what you can now maybe do is that get bacteria or yeast to make that enzyme or chemical or protein in fermenters. And then you can then do it in very large quantity without destroying the soil or the ecosystem. So that is called biomanufacturing or synthetic biology.
Wow, amazing, amazing.
So that will be not immediately. That will take maybe another 10 years. But by 2030, there will be a lot of companies coming up with many products which will avoid, even animals, meat without animals, egg without the chicken.
Oh boy.
Fish without harm, growing the fish. So many of these things we can grow internally. I'm not saying all, because some of them may not be as efficient as nature makes. but some of it we can make it better. And a lot of it actually we can make it. And I think that will reduce a lot of the problems. Also, we can create other features in bacteria to solve some of the problems. Like some bacteria can be made to eat the plastics and degrade the plastics. So we have a lot of plastics across the world in oceans and waters and which are polluting the environment.
Right.
So we can get them to degrade that. So all of this will be led by developments in biology.
Lovely.
And I'm not really exaggerating or saying that this is like not like a science fiction. I'm really talking of things of which have already passed the proof of concept. Many companies abroad, even Indian scientists, Indian entrepreneurs abroad are working on this. So one objective of SciGenome is also to bring some of them to India and help them set up a part of their business in India and get access to these technologies much faster instead of, you know, having to develop the base everything in India.
Really remarkable. So with companies like SciGenome, MedGenome, AgriGenome, MagGenome, and also your not-for-profit entity, which is doing so much to empower the entire space, the SciGenome Research Foundation, you're actually going to be impacting the entire bioeconomy for healthcare. Really amazing. So Sam, what is your view overall as a thought leader, as an innovation captain, okay? What is your view about research and development initiatives in India? You're empowering a lot of those, right, on genomics. Do you think that India will be able to rise in its scientific stature to compete with the developed countries?
India will rise in scientific stature, but unfortunately, we are a little behind or a little far behind now. So there is a lot to catch up. So trying to do everything from ground up and trying to catch up will be time consuming, and we might miss the boat in many of these cases. So we'll have to take a dual approach.
Okay.
We'll have to do some of these things from ground up, like the way we did in space research and the space exploration. But in many of the areas, we will have to hop across. Right, like the way we did in the computers.
Okay.
We didn't start with mainframes and mini frames and then go into PCs, right? We were behind, but we just jumped those two steps and we went directly into PCs. And with that led to the revolution of what we saw in the information technology.
Right.
So similarly in biology, we will need to jump across. We'll need to jump across in front. We don't need to develop everything from ground up. We have thousands of excellent Indian origin scientists across the world. So we will have to tap them. And there are also, we don't have to restrict ourselves only to Indian origin people, but I'm just saying they are more passionate about helping us and coming back and working with others. And I should say that that really enabled SciGenome 1.0. There are so many Indian origin scientists who are like, you know, helped me a lot. So I saw the passion that most of them have to give back and help the country back. And there are many others purely on commercial reasons too, because they realize that India is going to be a pretty large economy.
Right.
And even if you don't grow as big as China, we are democratic. There's a rule of law. And from centuries tradition of being fair to outsiders and to even invaders, if they come in, we treat them nicely. So, so I'm sure there will be a lot more people if you open up. In fact, a part of the reason for conferences like the way we hold is that we can't be closed. We can't restrict ourselves, and we can't take a narrow mind. We have to be very open in our mind. We have to collaborate with as many people as possible outside who are better than us, who are in ahead of us, and then bring our people up, our scientists and our engineers.
Correct. From the R&D sector, can you give me a little overview moving on to the diagnostics sector? How do you see it developing in India?
I think in diagnostic sector, we will move very fast. We will be able to develop our own tests for some of the specific diseases which are more common here. And we'll be able to take technologies from outside in some of these things which like I said earlier, which may be a little slow for us to develop ourselves. Like for example, liquid biopsy in cancer, where you can actually take just blood from the patient and know whether the patient is having cancer or not. So those type of new tests are coming some of it we are India companies are developing on their own. Some of it they are taking the technology from outside and implementing it. So COVID has also given a big boost to the diagnostic sector. So many labs across the country has upgraded. And we still are very cost effective compared to anywhere in the world, whether it is in diagnostics or in research.
Great.
So in many of these areas, even in research, we can really turn out to be the research center for the world, right?
Lovely.
In fact, there's a nice word I would like to use. We can use biology as a service, right?
Mm.
When you say software as a service, we can give biology and research as a service. And there is actually companies doing it, you know, Biocons, the second company called Syngene is doing excellent work.
Mm.
But there is potential for maybe a few hundred companies like that to come up in India and sort of replicate what we did in the software IT industry and become a research center for the world if you take a 10-year, 20-year vision.
Hmm. How do you collaborate with the entire infrastructure, the associations and Indian Medical Association, the ministries of health, etc.? I mean, as such an amazing evangelist across with genomics and the bioeconomy and the diagnostics, which is really going to empower healthcare in India, you could play an amazing role by being a partner and a guide for the government when they think of regulations or when they think of how to empower the ecosystem that is creating healthcare through the professionals, the experts, their education, policy, everything. So how do you see or visualize a role for yourself? Because you can play a very important role here. So what's your vision going ahead in partnering with and supporting the government and other wonderful professionals, your peers from India and globally alike?
Yes, Pawan, I think it's pretty important to do that. And so as a first step, I started working closely with the Kerala government. I am from here, from Kochi.
Mm.
And so I become an advisor to the Kerala government in biotechnology and try to help them put the new policies in place.
Mm.
Similarly, I also become a governing body member of the Kerala Startup Mission, where we are trying to get more startups come up. So the first phase is in trying to see what we can do here locally in Kerala.
Mm.
But I'm hoping that sooner or later we get opportunities to work with the central government as well.
Mm.
I know many of the people there because they have worked with us in giving work as a projects and to many of the companies in the portfolio group. But we will work more closely now in trying to see for the next set of technologies and in the bioeconomy vision which the government has, where can we contribute, what are the areas that we can help. We will try to help.
You're tuned to MVP, the Master's Voice podcast on MediaBeef.com. I'm your host and friend, Pawan Chavlan, and with me is Sam Santosh, founder and chairman of SciGenome, telling us why and what SciGenome is doing, which is so relevant to the entire healthcare space in India and for the world. Sam.
Leveraging the power of genetics and being able to sequence the code and do the analysis, SciGenome has been able to address several problems in healthcare, agriculture, drug discovery, etc. So we created a number of companies like MedGenome, Saxon Life Sciences, AgriGenome and MagGenome, which all became successful companies in addressing some of these problems. In the next phase, we are hoping to take advantage of more newer technologies like genome editing and synthetic biology to solve serious problems that the country is facing and enable the Prime Minister's vision of growing the bioeconomy from $80 billion now, what the ABLE report said, to $300 billion by 2030.
Excellent. More power to you, Sam. That has been an amazing conversation for me, Sam, full of insights, a lot of information. You truly are a remarkable science-savvy entrepreneur and also a visionary and very accurately described as the genome man of India. So, Sam, I enjoyed my conversation. What did you think of your chat with me on MVP, the Master's Voice from MediaBeef.com?
Thank you, Pawan. It was wonderful talking to you and getting an opportunity to be a part of the Master's Voice program and the wonderful podcast series from Media Brief. I also would like to congratulate you on your new initiative on the Health Brief, which I'm sure will be of great use to all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Sam. You're as kind and gracious as you are. Truly amazingly knowledgeable and a great evangelist for healthcare, not just in India, but across the world. Thanks also to Dr. Arun Abraham Isao again, another young druid in the making, a PhD senior account director at AdFactors PR, for having made this interaction possible. You will listen to my conversation with Sam Santosh, founder and chairman of SciGenome Private Limited, in this episode of MVP, the Master's Voice podcast on MediaBrief.com. It was truly insightful for me. I hope you will also feel the same. Till we meet again in the next episode of MVP, the Master's Voice podcast, this is your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla, founder and editor of MediaBrief.com, saying, take care, stay safe, stay healthy. Bye-bye.